Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
That's right, Talking with TD. You don't change a thing. We're just going to keep on rocking. You are now tuned in to Talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. We have the homie, Calvin Smith, hitting the switches over there, making it all work. Man, a lot of excitement, a lot to look forward to. We're going to do all of that. As always, you know what we do. We bring you the breakdowns. I have three for you. I was, I went 3 for 4. The last one I wanted to give for you, I wasn't able to. Logan Ryan was not feeling well today, so he wasn't available to us. But I tell you, man, Calvin, I the theme music for this week should be No New Friends, right? And because that's what you're seeing, right? A lot of new friends. All of a sudden, the seats are full. It's all good, though. Everyone's welcome. Come one, come all. And watch this team ball. That's really what it boils down to. But we have three play breakdowns. We're going to get into the offense. We're going to get into the defense. We're going to take that stroll on Calvin's corner. We're going to hang out there for a little bit. And then we're going to wrap this thing up and get you on out of here. But I tell you, man, there's a lot. There's so much to be excited for. This is the biggest game in Tennessee. This is the biggest game for this city of Nashville since last week. And before that, the biggest game was the one before that. But each week is getting bigger and bigger. But, you know, all jokes aside, AFC Championship, when was the last time that you as a Titans fan could say your team was going to be playing in the NFC Championship? AFC, wow, I'm tripping. AFC Championship. When's the last time you could say that, right? And it's just really cool, like walking through the city, you see a buzz. There are people, you know, with their Titans gear on. I think that's awesome. You know what I mean? And speaking of which, you want to make sure that you support these guys, you know, when they come back, win or lose. But let's get into the offense. We're going to go defensively. I want to look at that. Man, I'm so excited. Like, I can't really even, you know, keep the flow of the show right. But we're going to do our best to make it happen. So, first things first, let's look at the defense, right? That defense set the tone. They lost the coin toss, right? And the offense, you know, sputtered a bit when they first went out there. But then Lamar Jackson, he was able to push the guys down the field. They got into the Titans' half of the field, and he went to hit Mark Andrews on a pass across the middle, on a dagger route. It was a little high, but still Andrews was able to get his hands on it, deflect it, and my goodness. What do we always say about Kevin Byard, Calvin? He has a built-in GPS for the football. You want to know where the ball is? Just file 31. He's going to find it for you. And here is exactly what happened in this case. He picked it off, had a nice return. I guess he thought he was going back to his days as a scrambling quarterback, you know, in high school, the lefty laser. And, you know, he was able to return it a bit. And then you got the penalty on Lamar Jackson. It could be a face mask. It could be a horse collar. It was, you know, multiple things. But that got everything started, right? And then they came back. And when you talk about setting the tone early, whoo, that number 98, boy. That's a grown man. That is a grown man who doesn't have his grown man strength yet. Going against somebody like Marshall Yonder, he hit him, man. He hit Yonder with a swim move real quick, a quick one, and got by him. Yonder tried to undress him. He tried to undress him. He was holding him so hard. But Simmons ran through it. But that fourth down stop. Hey, I tell you this. John Harbaugh is brave and bold. They went for it. They couldn't get it because those guys up front, Jeffrey Simmons, Daquan Jones, they kept the line of scrimmage where it was. There wasn't any reestablishing it, you know what I mean, by the offensive line. And that's something we talked about. I sat right here in the show and talked about the importance of reestablishing the line of scrimmage for that offensive line. Well, it didn't happen, and that's why it was 4th-and-1. And my goodness, Arthur Smith, the next play call, 45-yard touchdown. Now, we're going to get into that breakdown in a bit in the next segment, but, I mean, it was all about Jeffrey Simmons up front dominating Marshall Yonder. Now, say what you want. Obviously, you know, there's an elephant in the room, right? The whole spitting incident. I don't know if that happened or not, right? I'm going to give Jeffrey the benefit of the doubt just from, you know, having interacted with him. But again, you're on the football field. Who knows what happened? If it did happen and it was intentional, that's ridiculous. It can't happen. But I tell you what's kind of funny. Marshall Yonder was accused of the same thing in 2018. Hey, Marshall, it's no fun when the rabbit got the gun, right? I'm just saying. That being said, they did an excellent job, the Titans, that is, of minimizing explosive plays from Lamar Jackson. Right? I mean, obviously, you had the 30-yard run. That throw to Marquise Brown, Lord have mercy. He might as well have just stood over top of him and just dropped it right into his hand. That was a beautiful throw. Excellent placement. He had a couple other nice throws. But for the most part, they weren't able to get the big plays because that defense contained him. They did a really good job of just, you know, having that double layer of outside containment. And then they just funneled him to the sideline. And that's something that multiple guys said. The whole objective, Kenny Vaccaro, he said the objective was to make him go sideline to sideline and not have him in a position where he can make those moves and get upfield for a 60-yard run. And that's basically what happened. That one run he had was Rashawn Evans was sent. It was a third and long. Evans was sent. I believe it was third and long. He was sent on the interior blitz, and Lamar was able to break free, and he found that escape lane, and he scattered for 30 yards. But for the most part, everything was minimized. Logan Ryan was a key part of that. He had a nice play where he scraped from one side. Now, his guy went in motion, and he went with him, and he scraped and went outside in and was able to tackle Lamar. And that ended up being a tackle for a loss. They play really good football. Kamale Correa, you know, he had a sack against his former team. They gave up on him. They traded him. I think it was like a 6th-round pick they acquired for him. He got to come back to Baltimore. And it was cool because I was standing in the tunnel, right, before everybody comes out. It was like early. And he came walking out in some slides with shorts and the shirt and the headphones on. And he just stood out there, and he just looked around, and you could tell, like, he was ready to be back at M&T Bank Stadium and make something happen. And that's what he did, man. Kamale Correa is playing outstanding football, and that's the thing. They're getting contributions from everybody in the pass rush, everyone. Harold Landry had a pressure late. He wasn't able to get home, but still was a good enough pressure to knock Lamar Jackson off the box. Now, what about number 99? Two sacks, a strip sack. You see this guy in the middle, right, on the interior as well as on the edge. He's doing an awesome job, and he's really coming into his own. Got his first postseason sack against the Ravens this week. So that was good to see. I think it's only right that if we're going to break things down, I think it's only right we break down the play that Jarrell Casey made, because this was one of the ways that they were able to stay plus in the turnover ratio. Jarrell Casey with the strip sack. Let's check it out.
This was the sack, well, one of the two that you had. This was the strip sack you had. So can you just kind of take me through what's happening here?
All right, so they checked the empty. So at the beginning of the play, we're in our zone. That's one of the new defenses we put in this week. When they check the empty, we go to a new zone, which go to our zone plumber. And it's basically me coming on the edge, going to edge rush. But the running back, as you see, steps out, give me a chip block to do a, basically help out the tackle. He bumps me back inside leverage. I pop the guy's arm, give him a forklift. And next you know, quarterback sitting right in my presence, try to get him down. He make me miss, but continue to go with a second effort and get the strip fumble, come out with a big play for the team.
And that's one of the things that has kind of like become your trademark, the high motor. How did you develop that?
Man, just over time, just knowing that being in this league, being a big guy, they saying you're too big to pass rush, you're too big to be out there all three or four downs. You want to prove guys wrong. And so, you know, coming into this game, I always said I wanted to be one of those guys to be a Hall of Fame guy. Mm-hmm. Always had that type of mindset. in order to get there, you got to be able to be on that field. And so I just took that approach and tried to lose some weight, tried to get out there and be one of the fast guys, be one of the guys that can pass rush. And the Lord gave me the ability to go out there and do it, and just the hard work and the blessing that Coach Millar came in and gave me his blessing to be on his pass rush package. And everything turned up from there.
He was a really good player. Did you ever get to watch him?
I never got to watch him. I watched some of his little highlights when he used to show him a couple clips of when we were in the meetings. But watching him just on TV or anything, I never really watched him. Really sat down and watched just a whole clip of him. Just watched a couple of sprinkles of him. He's a damn good rusher, and he definitely saw a couple of that in me.
Yeah, he and Chris Dolman, they were a tandem. But one of the things on this play too, you actually show your ability, whereas initially you're head up, but then you move outside. How does things change? Now, you're not standing up on this one, but how do things change for you as a stand-up edge defender?
I wouldn't say necessarily anything changed. It's really me deciding if I want to stand up that play or not.
Okay.
It's not really me doing something because I say I'm going to do this move or not. It's just more so if I'm feeling like I want to be comfortable standing up this play. If I got a faster guy, I got a slower guy, it all determines. But it don't really change anything. I'm still going to do the same kind of moves and do the same thing. It's just trying to get people to get a little bit more confused.
You'll still be the same old
guy. All right,
appreciate you.
So there you have it. He said regardless, he's the same old G. And I give him that. And what you got there was just a little bit of insight on what goes through his mind as he's rushing. If you notice, he said he saw the running back, right? They motioned it to empty. And then go back and watch the play. He literally he goes from over top of the tackle to outside of it. So now his angle is a little bit different because he wants to loop inside. And it's funny because, like he said, that running back got the chip on him and just basically knocked him into the gap that he wanted to go to. I thought that was pretty cool. But, again, that's an example of a guy who has, bit his time and now it's his opportunity to go ahead and show what he could do. So we looked at that. Right? They faced a pocket passer in Tom Brady. They faced the jitterbug, the guy that could pretty much do everything, make you miss and everything like that in Lamar Jackson. But now they have a blend of both in Patrick Mahomes. Ooh. That first game, man, he had 446. He definitely did the thing against the Titans. So what's next? What should this team be concerned about defensively? I think it starts with the speed of Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill. And, man, let me tell you something. Mecole Hardman had that one catch, and he put his get-somewhere shoes on, and he was gone after he got his hands on the ball. That is something that they're going to have to make sure that they find a way to keep guys like that in front of them. Right. So that means when they run their different routes, especially Tyreek Hill, when they run their deep routes, you're going to have to find a way to get back. Right. And keep him in front of him. Now, the good thing is the Titans have Adoree Jackson healthy. And I'll say this. Adoree Jackson has been playing some outstanding football. He's been targeted, I think it's 13 times or something like that. But he has 5 pass breakups. I mean, the guy is doing this thing. You saw the whole thing with Julian Edelman. He had a breakup there. Obviously, the catch by Marquise Brown was a tough one, but for the most part, he played Marquise Brown well. Now you're going to have that same speed in Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill. So I wanted to pull Adoree aside and just get his take on the speed and just what is going on, this game, what he has at stake and who he's facing. And also just what's making him play really well. So check this out right here.
Speed that Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill bring to the pitcher, how your speed matches that?
Just both fast guys and can take the top off, can catch the ball, short, deep, immediate route. So you just got to go out there and play. I feel like you can't. I don't even know how to describe it. You just got to go out there and compete.
Can't worry about it.
You just got to compete. Right? Yeah, that's it. Just go out there and compete and do your job and let the chips fall in your mate. We always talk about already written. So there's no reason to go out there scared or timid. You just got to go out there and play. You mean, you prepared all week, so you just got to go out there and compete.
When you see a guy like Tyreek is so fast, but yet he could throttle down and run routes breaking back to the ball, is that unique with what he brings to the table?
Yeah, he's super, super talented. Be able to, have body control, use the speed, get out his breaks, and do different things. And, to see him do that, that is unique.
And how about the way he attacks the football as well? Is that something that...
Competes. Something like how Steve Smith was. You know, not the biggest receiver, but he'll go out there and compete for the ball. You see him, if it's a 50-50 ball, he going out there trying to jump and get it. So, yeah, I like his game. I like what he brings to the table, that dog mentality.
And last thing, you put together, especially like the last couple of playoff games, they have been, you know, outstanding. You know, you're getting your PBUs, guys, you're actually getting your hands on the ball as much as guys that you're guarding are, right? Five PBUs, five receptions. What's clicking for you? Like, how are you getting into that zone?
Just out there competing, having fun. I feel like, I don't know, just competing and having fun and keep doing everything that I've been doing. I mean, I haven't changed up, haven't done anything different. Everything is, I guess like I said, just clicking, but just believing in myself, believing in everything that I done put in the work for, and, you know, eventually I felt like everything was going to come together. It might not always come together when you want it to, but when it does, I mean, I'm happy it's happening right now.
Cool. Appreciate you.
One thing that always cracks me up about Adoree Jackson is just how unbothered he is. Like, that dude, the world could be coming to an end. And it was written. You know, it's all good. You know, I just got it. That's just the way he is, right? And it's funny because you see how he talks a lot. But it's funny, like, when he doesn't want to talk, I watched him. There was a reporter that was talking to him, and he was done. Like, he didn't want to talk anymore. And the dude asked him a question, and the door started answering it. Then he just started looking up in the sky. I was cracking up, but the bottom line is he has to go out there and match with guys like Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman. He is their sole guy that could turn and run with these dudes. So it's definitely something to really keep your eye on and watch out for. But here's the thing about the Chiefs attack. They have those road runners, but then they got a guy in Travis Kelce that, man, he gives you a lot of problems. And there are things that you could do. I actually have a breakdown up on Twitter and Instagram of how they could use Travis Kelce against man defense as well as against zone defense. Very similar options as far as like their route combinations and things like that. So Travis Kelce is a problem. And he is one of the best route runners. I like the way Zach Ertz runs routes. Don't get me wrong. But Travis Kelce has wiggle. Like, I guarantee you take Travis Kelce to a party, he'll cut a rug. Meaning that dude, he could probably dance because you watch the wiggle and how he is in the routes, and especially at the line of scrimmage, man, and then even at the top of the route, giving the move and doing the things that he does. It's really, really fascinating to watch him do that. I think, I'll say it, he's the best route runner when it comes to the tight end position. And, I mean, this is a guy, man, he had 97 catches. I didn't realize he had that many catches. Just short of 100 catches, man, and just – week in and week out, man, that guy he shows up. Mike Vrabel was actually complimentary of the way that he runs routes. I think he was right, too, because there were some things that he said that make a lot of sense, and it makes it a lot harder to prepare for because you can't really emulate what he does in his routes. Let's check out what Mike Vrabel had to say when he was asked about Travis Kelce and the Chiefs offense.
And it can score from any part of the field. You know, they have roles and they have guys that they like to do certain things. You know, I think the thing that I appreciate the most about watching Andy and their offensive players is that I know what the diagram in the book looks like. And a lot of those routes and plays don't really look like those diagrams. They you know, Travis, for example, he's put the personal touch on a lot of routes. I would say every route that he runs, you know, there's going to be something to it that probably looks a little different than most tight ends. You know, Tyreek Hill, obviously the speed and the explosiveness. They have plays that they like for Sammy. And, you know, Patrick does an amazing job of getting everybody involved and using the weapons and his ability to get out of the pocket and extend plays. You know, that was a big factor in the game the other day, his ability to gain yards and chunk yardage outside the pocket.
So there you have it. They have plays they like for Sammy. Patrick does a good job of distributing the ball all over. But let's face the facts. Tight ends have given the Titans problems, right? Whether it be Jared Cook, you know, that was trouble. Who else, Calvin? Who were some other tight ends that you recall gave the Titans problems. There have been two or three at least, even four.
I wouldn't even say Mark Andrews had a bad day last week for the Ravens. And I think they played him well, but he still did it. I think how many catches was it? Five or six catches, right. 70, 80, 90-something yards?
Yeah.
Solid day.
Solid day, yeah.
So, and he was hurt.
So to your point, yeah, the tight ends have – you know, been an area where the Titans have not been the best in covering. So that's something that we definitely have to focus on, right? When you're looking at this game plan and looking at finding ways to stop the Chiefs, obviously, you know, this guy, Travis Kelce, is their number one receiver, their top pass catcher. Mahomes is by no means a scary quarterback. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, quarterbacks that are a little more scary, they tend to go to their tight ends. But that's not the case here. And just the way that they're able to be on the same page as far as when that QB scramble rule comes up, you know, and their ability to freelance together is outstanding. So big thing to watch out for there. Now, another area that I want to just touch on quickly is Jayon Brown, right? He took part in practice. We don't know for sure, you know, how things are going to work out this week. But he did take part in practice somewhat during individual periods. So that's something to watch. But if he can't go, David Long Jr. will get the opportunity to go again. Now, David Long went out but came back. But here's the thing. David Long, week 10, you know, our breakdown, he was actually, you know, that was his debut on Talking with TD. We have Rashawn Evans on as well. The forced fumble that he got, and he was able to, you know, force that fumble, Rashawn Evans, the scoop and score for 53 yards. The thing I want to touch on with David Long real quick is just his ability to play in space. It's something we talked about for last week's game. You're going to have to do it again this week, except for it's a little bit different because you don't have to play in space and judge which gaps you have to control, right? You have to play in space and judge which zone you have to control because this is clearly more of a passing attack. So a couple things to take heed. I think it's this defense, I think they match up well. We'll see what happens. We're going to go to a commercial break, but first, I want to direct you to TennesseeTickets.com. This is your opportunity. If you haven't gotten tickets, they have multiple deals going on their website. You could go there. There are no extra fees when you purchase. You don't have any markups or anything like that as far as you know, service fees, etc. What you see is what you pay. TennesseeTickets.com. Go support local businesses and your Titans over there in Kansas City. And in addition to that, while you're on the plane riding over, you know, before you get on the plane, go ahead and search Talking with TD on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Download that. That'll give you a good hour worth of entertainment while you get ready for the game on your flight over there. And if you're not flying over there, download it anyway and give it that rating. I appreciate it. We're going to go to the commercial and we'll be right back.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Say peace to cats who rock Mac, knowledge is street astrologist.
Yeah. Right up the mic, God, knowledge, it's a Wednesday. We're recording on a Wednesday. Woo Wednesdays, baby. Yes, sir, that's the Ghostface Killer Daytona 500. And I tell you, the Daytona 500 is just what you have when Derrick Henry is on the field because it's all about running that rock. That's the big-time thing that this Titans team likes to do. So before we get into that, I want to look at a few other things, right? Because here's the thing with this offense, and I think Arthur Smith should be proud of what they did early in that game. And this is what allowed them to knock the game plan, make it go haywire for Greg Roman and the Ravens. And Miles Boykin, he said it. He said it, they got us off of our game a little bit. It proves in the pudding. The way that they did that was responding to the turnovers, right? The interception. They answered that with a drive down the field. Jonnu Daggone Smith. Man, I was like, did he catch that? He caught that football. That was an outstanding catch. And what more can you say about Ryan Tannehill trusting his guy to make a play? He threw it to a spot and just said, well, you know what? Jonnu's going to get it. I'm okay. He's going to get it. Nice route design, too, on that one. They had their and I talked to Vrabel, actually, you know, my question about the zero splits. They had it there on that, in that back, on that trips. And Jonnu released outside, and he ran like an out and up. But with that zero split, that bunch formation, when you do those routes out of that, see what happens? It creates natural separation in space because – the different roles change, right? normally, you're not gonna have the inside guy doing what Jonnu did in this case, but the way that he turned it up and Tannehill threw it there, that corner of the end zone allowed him to make the play. Outstanding play, man. Outstanding. Tip it to yourself and then have the wherewithal to get your toes down right inbounds and secure the ball all the way through contact. They reviewed it, and it was good. And you could just see, because we have Ravens fans in front of us. And it's funny, right? Before the game, we were trying to, like, look through because they gave flags up. So these guys are waving their flags, and the flags are getting in the way of, because the press box is so low. So we're trying to look, and the flags were waving. After that touchdown, I had a clear view of the field. Very clear view, I'm just saying. So the other response that they had was on fourth down, right? You had to stop. They had the ball at the 45-yard line. Hey, man. Arthur Smith did like Cobra Kai, right? No mercy. That's what he said, no mercy. Dialed that play up. Ryan Tannehill once again, and this is what I'm saying about Ryan Tannehill, right? I think the game manager title, that moniker, it's appropriate. Their formula is to run, run, run. Now, Tannehill said on Wednesday, he said it, of course, as a quarterback, he would like to throw the football more. But as a quarterback and as a competitor, he wants to win. That is a good sign. And when you have a game manager like that, it's like this. Look, hey, Ryan, this is me pretending I'm Arthur Smith. Hey, Ryan, listen, here's the deal. Don't lose this game for us, okay? I don't want you to lose the game, but we're going to give you a couple opportunities to make plays. I need one or two outstanding plays from you. This is what we need you to do. We're going to ride Derrick Henry. We just need you to give one or two outstanding plays, and that's what we're looking for. That's basically what Arthur Smith is probably like. That's, I'm not going to say verbatim what he's saying, but that's the concept. That's the idea. Right? And what has happened in the two playoff games? Against the Patriots. Okay. You had two really good throws. The tight window throw, staring down the blitz to Anthony Firkser for the touchdown. Then you reverse the field, going the opposite direction later. It's third and long. The outbreaking route, stick your fingers. He hauled it in, and it was a first down, and they kept the chains moving. Then Vrabel did what he did to the Emperor, and, you know, he had to fit over there on the sideline when he made more and more time tick off. Baltimore, okay, two big plays. We talked about the Jonnu Smith one. The strike to Khalif Raymond. That is basically the formula. Now, here's the thing. I think if given the opportunity to pass the ball 25 to 30 times, I think Tannehill could still be effective. So if they have to play a shootout, as they did in the game against the Chiefs in Week 10, I think they could do it. Obviously, you want to stay away from the shootout, but I don't want to get too far away from that throw because that was an outstanding throw on that 45-yard touchdown. And the route, Lord have mercy. That daggone Khalif Raymond. Man, look, Calvin, hey, man. I remember earlier, you said, man, that 14, he could go. He's all right. And I was like, yeah, he is having a good practice. It's continued to be that way. And it's funny because I had an interview with Tannehill back in training camp. And the last play of practice, he threw a deep ball to Khalif Raymond, and Vrabel was like, beep, beep, blow the whistle, beep, beep. All right, that's it. You know what I'm saying? But here's Khalif Raymond breaking down his 45-yard touchdown.
This was the touchdown that you had. I had to talk to you about this because this route is tremendous.
Appreciate
so
it,
can you just kind of take us through the play?
Yeah, man. We knew that there was a chance of somebody cutting on the play of one of the safeties. So we had a design where all I had to do was run off that one guy and hit up the seam. But I had to make sure I kept it high so the backside safety didn't have a chance to come in.
And it was more than that. You know what I mean? That's an all-pro corner
You
had turning the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that a little bit. The lean and using your eyes to.
Yeah, that's one thing Coach Moore always tells us about, man, use our eyes, man, use our body language to sell the route, man. So when I stuck my foot in the ground, I wanted to make him think that I was going out so that way he could potentially flip his hips, and he did. And after that, man, I was just, man, hitting the gas and trying to get upfield as fast as I can. And I make sure that when I do, like I said, invent that he turned his hips, I couldn't let him come into play. So I had to keep it high so that way it was an easier ball for him to throw.
Exactly. And at the end, you finished it all the way through the contact with the ground.
Yes, sir.
How did you do that?
Man, like I said, me and Matt Thompson, man, we always work over the shoulder catches all the time after every practice. Actually, he actually works with me and Tajay all the time. So that was just one of the examples of just putting in practice so I could see it, and finally the game it came at that weird angle that we've been throwing. And thanks for the rest, man. I was able to complete it. So.
Now, when that play is called, obviously that's your play. That's you're the guy on that. What are you thinking? Like, what's going through your mind? As it's called, you look at the coverage and make sure.
Yeah, you try to get as much information as you can pre-snap, and then post-snap everything changes. Like, so this NFL, man, the guys, I mean, they're very good at disguising coverage. So when they did all that, man, as I'm on the run, I'm trying to make sure, okay, who am I running it off of? And once the coverage developed, I said, okay, I have to run it off this guy, and if I make this guy turn his hips, then I'll be good. And I was able to do that. So.
And there's many attributes to your game, toughness, right? I always talk about you play like your ribs are showing, like you're starving. But another attribute is speed, right? And having to process all of that, how do you, in the middle of a play, processing all that, maintain your speed the way you do?
Man, I think it comes with preparation before. Like I said, you can't play when you're thinking. So I try to do as much as I can in the film room, so that way when I finally get to the field, there is no more thought. And it's all reactionary just because of what I've seen already, what I was expecting. And that way I can just play with speed because I'm not overthinking anything. So,
gotcha. Appreciate it.
So that's the thing, and this is something that I remember when T.Y. Hilton first came to the league, and that was something that kind of hurt him. Like, he was a guy that was based so much off of speed, and it took him a bit to get used to, you know, having to convert routes and do all the things that was asked of an NFL playbook. But once he got it, Lord, my goodness, he started balling. Khalif Raymond has been around, you know, a guy who's released 9 times. Right? You know, he's been up and down on this current roster, but what he's always been able to do, and the guy had his block knocked off, you know what I mean, and had the concussion, but what he's consistently been able to do is come up big when his number is called. And you can't ask for anything more than that, right? So that's Khalif Raymond, and if we talk about a guy coming up big when his number is called, Calvin, you remember chasing TD earlier this year, right? We were in the different studio, and I almost put my fist through that desk, you know, when we were talking about running the football. And it's just, I didn't expect this, right? I didn't expect this. But I've always felt Derrick Henry needed touches. Now, what he's doing is beyond any film study. It's beyond any analytical. The dude is just, it's stupid. What he's doing, right? So we're talking about a guy, the first, man, this game has been around for a long time. They're actually, celebrating the 100th year? Calvin, in all 100 years of this league playing, nobody has ever had back-to-back-to-back 180-yard games. But your man, Derrick Henry, has. This dude is just taking over, and it's just crazy because, and you know, from the home games, you come here, right, and you watch before the game, and you know, we got our phones out and we're videoing stuff. There's no film of 22 before games, right, during the warm-up when everybody's out there in their sweatsuits looking good, catching the ball, posing for the camera, doing all that stuff. Nah, no Derrick Henry. But then once they bring the positional groups out, he comes out. But man, the conditioning that it takes to carry the football, this man is going to have around 400 touches by the time the daggone season is over. Man, and that hit that Brandon Williams put a hit on him, I was like, goodness. I thought that, you know, Derek was going to get up slowly, but he popped up. But the fact of the matter is, this guy just continues to come and come and come and come, and he's relentless. And then old Earl Thomas. Well, you know, it looked like the Patriots didn't want to tackle him. We're going to have that different mentality. Hey, my man, how did that work out? You got stiff-armed into being a lead blocker. All I can say, be careful what you ask for. Same thing to Patriots fan. Oh, we want Derek. Go on. Where's Henry? 22. What do you have? A buck 82 against them? Ran it all over y'all. This week, they weren't as inviting as far as the crowd was concerned, because they knew, like, hey, listen, I'm not trying to poke that bear. But Derrick Henry still did what he had to do regardless. And I think when you look at this, right, against the Chiefs, Derrick Henry averages 7.3 yards per carry. That's the highest out of every other team that he's gone against. We'll get into the Chiefs part a little bit, but I want to just get back to just this Ravens game and how the guys up front, they dominated. They absolutely, like, they were literally moving people. What did Roger Saffold say? No white tees in the club, right? Including the white V-necks. Nah, no Timberlands, nothing in the club. What did Taylor Lewan tell me? Hey, man, we are glorified bodyguards. Well, they were moving people on Saturday. They consistently reestablished the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was to the point where Derrick Henry at times wasn't getting touched till 4 or 5 yards down the after he carried the ball. Like, it's crazy. One of the times that happened was his 9-yard carry. This was, I think it was in the second quarter, I think it was. But it was a really outstanding, just it showed you the zone scheme. And I closed my eyes and picture it, because it was just so beautiful. Like, you see it flow to the left, and you see everybody blocking down. And then you see Derrick Henry cut that thing back, and he squirts through. And you see, before he squirts through, you see Roger Saffold just putting his hands on somebody and saying, hey, listen, man, you're not allowed to go this way. I need you to go over here. Come here. Come here, man. And just move them over. When you have an offensive line playing the way that they are, because Nate Davis is also stepping up. Jack Conklin is playing like a guy who needs to be re-signed. Taylor Lewan is playing like a guy who at one point was the highest paid offensive lineman in football. Oh, and Roger Saffold, and then Ben Jones, which is what Mike Vrabel called the glue that holds everything together. These guys are outstanding. I want to get into a breakdown because, you know, again, I was always taught to show love for my big dogs. My best friend is the center from my team. You know what I mean? It's been ingrained in me to show love for my big dogs. So we're not going to leave Roger Saffold out of the Talking with TD play breakdown segments. This is Roger Saffold talking about Derrick Henry's 9-yard run. Check it out.
Clay, I want to see if you could kind of take me through this, because one of the things that we're seeing, you guys, you know, the stepbrothers, you're coming together, blocking really well.
He
turned right around.
Well, basically what we're looking at is just a B block. We're doing the wide zone. We got to make sure we cut off this three technique as well as the linebacker. I'm trying to make sure that I get to him before anything happens. As long as I can get him some push up the middle of the field, it's going to be fine. But Taylor has to make sure that he's able to cut him up and drive him up the field. As you see, we get a lot of push down the middle of the field, so it's kind of hard to stop when you got your guys moving backwards like that.
How much does, like, the timing and the synchronize of everything in that type of zone scheme, like, how much is that important in this type of situation?
It's very important, and also, I mean, if you're looking at it, this is probably our 2000s rep of doing a B block between me and Taylor. So at this point, you know, it's kind of just body recognition, just knowing what to do at the right times.
Now, Mike Vrabel said it was naive. I asked him about the way you guys are coming together. He said it was naive of him to think that Taylor was going to come right in and you guys were just going to click right away, you know, after the suspension.
Right.
What has been the key for you guys to come together the way that you have?
You know, it's the constant day after day is what's been helping us. And, you know, it's more than just practice. It's the way that we talk about football in the classroom. It's the way we talk about football when we're just hanging out outside of the facility. You know, those types of things has really helped out our chemistry. And I think just day in and day out of just grinding, man. I mean, you got to want to do it in order for things to get better. And we had a real will to try to get things back on the right track for this team.
And then last thing, when I asked Vrabel about the O-line, he pointed out things from each of you, but he also had mentioned Nate Davis.
Yeah.
How have you seen a young fella come in and ingratiate
himself? He's settling in great. And, you know, he's taking what we tell him, and he's using it and kind of using it in his own way. And I think that when you can make the practice your own, and you can go out and then you can execute, you're going to see good things. And what's really good is his effort has been outstanding. And I just think that just as a unit, we're just a lot more cohesive than we were in the past.
Thanks, man.
So I love the breakdown. And Saffold is a really good story also. I mean, we talk about a tale of two seasons, right? 2-4 and 7-3 and then into the playoffs. But that tale of two seasons applies to Roger Saffold because, man, that dude is showing, like, the strength. Remember in the preseason? Remember, daggone.
Byron Cowart for the Patriots? Is that 99 stuck his arm right through the chest? Yeah.
I was sitting there. My mouth was open, and I'm turning like, huh? You know, and I hit the Scooby-Doo on him. That's what I was thinking. And then it happened again. I think it was, I don't remember who it was, but two guys got him. Jordan Phillips got him, the Buffalo game. I'm just like, yo, what the heck, man? This dude is known for his strength and getting bowled over. But I guess it just speaks to how important it is to settle in. And that's what's happening with this offensive line collectively. They're mending. They're settling together. This week, there's a grown man on that Chiefs defensive line, but I don't know. It seems like he may not play. You know, Chris Jones. And when I say grown man, look, man, I went down there. I wanted to see for myself. Hey, Calvin, that's a grown man. Like, he's something. You see it on film, right? But even when you see a guy in person, yeah, he's a beast. But you have the calf injury, and here's the deal. He wasn't playing last week. They're saying he can't get a push off of that calf. Boy, I tell you what, if he's not in the middle of that line, they're going to be in trouble. Now, they've been able to knuckle up and give up, what did Vrabel say, 14 points a game, you know, in that streak that they've had. They're not, the Titans aren't the only team that's hot. The Chiefs are hot too. So I think when it comes down to running the football, not having Chris Jones could really hurt that team. But, you know, they're going to use 8 in the box. Tyrann Mathieu is a guy, you know, the honey badger, right? They like to move him all over the place. Not the biggest guy, but they'll use him to loop inside, rush gaps. I saw him bowl over a center in one of the games that I watched. I think it was against Denver. Then they rush him off the edge. They drop him to coverage. But regardless, this is a guy that plays in the box, and they use him to make plays against the run. Same thing with Sorensen. They drop him down. Now, one thing to take note of, Juan Thornhill is not playing in this game. And he was on pace to be all rookie team. You know what I mean? That safety was outstanding playing center field. And his ability to be a center fielder is what allowed them to have Sorensen and Tyrann Mathieu in the box, right? So they were using a lot of 8 in the box. But guess what? You stack the box against 22, it works in his favor. Do you realize, like, here's a stat for you, Calvin. Derrick Henry has 239 yards after contact in this playoffs. From scrimmage, DK Metcalf is the closest. We're not talking about total yards from scrimmage for Derrick Henry. We were just talking about yards after contact. DK Metcalf from scrimmage has 219 yards. That's the most. That's the closest to Derrick Henry. So his yards after contact are more than anyone else's yards, period. That tells you right there. 8 in the box, Mike Vrabel spoke about it today when I asked him. He talked about the offensive line moving people. He talked about Derrick Henry getting through there, and he talked about his ability to turn it up, right? You hit that gear, and you get going, and he gets going. Hey, Derrick, you got hawked by Marcus Peters, though. Come on, man. Come on, man. So, still, that's just an example of why he's such a really good player against 8 in the box. So, look, man, 8 in the box, there's advantage Derrick Henry. Rushing the ball. 8 in the box means one-on-one on the outside. Look, man. AJ Brown, Corey Davis. You need to take that personal. They put a guy out there on you with no safety help over top, man, basically they're saying you don't deserve to be on this field with me because my guy's better than you. That's what the coach is saying. That's what he's saying. So here's the deal. They have to take advantage of that. A.J. Brown against Breshad Breeland. Hey, look, man, you got to win that. You got to win that. A.J. Brown against Kendall Fuller. You know, you got to win that. A.J. Sharkhandrick West?
Chavarius.
Chavarius.
MTSU guy.
Yeah. I always get him confused with the guy at on the Packers. I forget his first name is Sharkhandrick. I always get him confused. But anyhow, that guy, Chavarius, MTSU guy, as you said, those guys against A.J. Brown, has to be advantage Titans. Now, I drew up earlier, if you go on a timeline, on a Twitter timeline, I drew up a way to use motion to get A.J. Brown one-on-one with Kendall Fuller with a lot of opportunity. You could work what is normally a slot feed. So there are some things that you could do, you know, but bottom line, you got to take advantage of this. That passing offense, look, the one or two plays that Tannehill has to make, one of those has to come against eight in the box because you got to make them like, hey, you know what? I don't know that we could do this eight in the box thing against this guy, right? And you have to make them make that decision not only based upon how well Derek runs against it. You got to make those guys aware of your ability to throw the football because they're challenging you. And look, man, live up to the challenge. Jonnu Smith, he's going to be another factor. I can't forget Sticky Fingers, right? And how about it? Michael Pruitt, what, 15-yarder to open up the Ravens game? Still a factor. I'm waiting to see the Kyrie Blasting game Packers opened up, too. I was cracking up, man, practice today. He got Coach Tony, too. It was funny, man. So, hey, look, he's jacked up. They're all jacked up. I'm jacked up. You're jacked up. We all need to be jacked up. Why? Because it's AFC Conference Championship weekend. While you're jacked up, go to Google Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, and give me that jacked up rating. You know what I mean? Jack it on up. 5-star rating. Talking with TD. Make sure you check it out. Again, ticket opportunities, TennesseeTickets.com. No extra fees, none of that. We'll go to a break. Hey, you know what time it is. Calvin's Corner coming up.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Can we do it like this? Get it on. I've been playing my dudes for the longest. No more corners. Let that play. Let's get it on. Yeah, so that's Smith and Wesson. Let's get it on. And that's exactly the mentality right now. Let's get it on. Always got to put that rider music on because, you know, my guy Calvin, that's what he likes. So we are back on Calvin's Corner once again. What's going on?
What is up, TD? I know you're going to like this Calvin's Corner because you mentioned it earlier, but do you remember the really specific thing from Calvin's Corner after the Chiefs game?
I don't.
So I came on here and I said, in week 10, the Tennessee Titans had a significantly higher rushing EPA than passing EPA.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, Ryan Tannehill and the Titans passing offense in that game was break even in terms of expected points added EPA. Meaning when they were throwing the ball, and most of this came on the final drive on average, like they weren't doing too much to add to their expected points total. Where the run game was at an insanely high level against the Kansas City Chiefs last time these teams played. And that was when I came on here and I basically said they just kept running and it kept continuing to be the correct move against the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you've listened to this podcast, like, you know that yes. That is a rarity when I come on here and say that. And then you combine that with what's been happening in the last few weeks with this offensive line and Derrick Henry, and it's really a perfect scenario for me to come on here and say that I think there's a lot more opportunity for Derrick Henry given what happened in the Chiefs game and what's happened in these last few weeks. Because you talked about it in the last segment. It's stupid. It's ridiculously improbable what's going on, honestly, kind of with the Titans as a whole right now, but with Derrick Henry in this run game. I mean, it has been at these levels that are outliers to the point of danger. Like, because there's been a lot of talk in the analytics world right now about what's going on with Derrick Henry and how this is all happening and how far of an outlier this data set is, this collection of what he's doing is within the collection of the run game as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, like we've said, it is uncharted territory because he's setting records. So when you combine that with how well he ran the ball against the Chiefs, then you add in, like you said last segment, that there's no Chris Jones, and it actually paints a picture that's feasible analytically, where the Titan, where you can say with a fair level of certainty that the Titans can run the ball and beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, like we both know, that it's not an absolute thing. It's not like only run the ball. I mean, we even saw it last game when the Titans had such a good game running the football. On the final drive, you know, there was that big throw to Khalif Raymond a little bit before that. And then on the final drive, you know, Tannehill throws the ball downfield. They get a couple chunk plays. They hit Adam Humphries to win the game. It's going to take that from both. But given the workload Derrick Henry's had in these last few games and the way the offensive line is blocking and let subpar, at best, Chiefs run defense, I believe they're 29th in the NFL in terms of yards per attempt. It's possible. Now, if Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, those guys start going bananas and Derrick Henry isn't at this outlier unsustainable level, then things need to kind of switch and change. But right now, with how it's been working out for the Titans, it's been painting this perfect picture of them being able to play in this way that, I mean, obviously, we didn't see it coming at this level, but that we certainly haven't seen before. So the only question at this point is how long does this keep going on?
Yeah.
Right? And that's what you worry about. Yeah. And that's why, you know, you still have to be ready for Tannehill to do something, because if it's Patrick Mahomes, he could really go for 50 and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep.
Sometimes. So one, that's what's beautiful about this game is that you get the two hottest teams in the AFC.
Yeah.
Like, you knock out the Ravens, Titans, Chiefs, what more could you ask for? Passing game versus this run game, it's a beautiful, beautiful matchup. And that there are aspects to what the Titans have done in the run game that lend themselves to continuing. Does that mean that I bet on 185 yards again?
That's a lot, man.
I mean, that's so many. And you have to really be dominating. But it's not the craziest thing in the world at this juncture. And that's what is, that's very surprising given how this season and everything that's gone on has happened, that it's at this historic rate like this.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, you mentioned Chris T. Jones. I touched on it last segment, too, with Juan Thornhill. That, him not being out there is very underrated because, again, that's what allows them. And they do a lot of things with Sorensen. They really rely on that guy in rush defense, you know, and he's someone that gives them an opportunity to be better against the run in their sub packages. But now you have to use him playing center field, which is a mismatch, you know, in the passing game also. So I think you're right. Everything is more conducive to toting the rock more. And what's the best defense against Pat Mahomes and that offense? Keep him off the field. One way you could guarantee they don't gash you, but not having them on the field.
Sometimes it's your only hope.
Yeah. Now, I tell you what's interesting. In that last game, Derrick Henry had the buck 88, but I think it was only 22 minutes the Titans had the ball.
Because he just kept he kept breaking off big, huge runs. He was hitting home runs. Like he had a 3-home run game or something like that.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you know, you obviously, if points come, you listen, I'm not going to complain, right? You can't complain, but at the same time, I think they need to get a little more in the ball control side of things. Look, man, it goes back to just the basic formula. Get this thing to the second half. And, you know, since 2005, Derrick Henry has the most touchdowns in the second half. 2005, Sean Alexander had 15 touchdowns in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the Super Bowl. He was also the last guy to win the rushing title and go, it may have been Le'Veon Bell. But either way, you know, he was one of the last guys to do it. So, I mean, there are a lot of parallels. You know, Sean Alexander went to Alabama. But the whole point is get it to the second half. This guy has 14 touchdowns in the second half. Get it to the second half and allow him to take over and just, you know, keep hammering away.
Another note on what's going on with this Titans run game right now, because that's what I want to focus on specifically for this Calvin's Corner, because, I mean, when we talk about this, we're talking about something that's full of unsightly numbers that nobody was predicting at all, and rightfully so, because it's the best stretch of all time. And then I went into next-gen stats, and I looked at the efficiency and time behind the line of scrimmage metric for running backs. And in the playoffs, Derrick Henry has spent the least amount of time behind the line of scrimmage on average for each rush. So basically, he's getting the ball and getting past the line of scrimmage faster than any other running back in the playoffs. And then the efficiency metric for running backs is not like an efficiency like yards per attempt, how many yards you're gaining. Rather, it measures how much of a north to south runner you've been. So, yeah. So a lower efficiency score is going to tell you that this person is not, you know, spending time making side cuts, going laterally, moving these different ways, just pretty much straight up and down the field. Well, Derrick Henry also has the lowest efficiency in the playoffs. Were you going to add something to Ron?
No, go ahead. You're flowing.
Yeah, and I thought about this in two ways. One, you know, it's what we've talked about with Derrick Henry, him being able to get his head down, you know, talking with Eddie George, rolling, right, like that, being decisive in his running. But also, I think both of those metrics lend a lot to the offensive line, and this is where I'm going to pay homage to what the guys on the offensive line have done analytically, is that it's hard for Derrick Henry to be that efficient and spend so little time behind the line of scrimmage if there's something he doesn't see, if there's no hole open for him to look at. And these guys are opening holes and doing it so Henry gets the ball, he sees it, and boom, the line of scrimmage has been moved, he's there. And I'll wager to say this, like, my gripe with running the football is with running the football itself, not Derrick Henry, and I want to make sure that's never misconstrued because I think Derrick Henry's a good running back. It's just generally running the ball. But Derrick Henry is probably the most difficult running back to tackle once he gets past the second level. Like, I can't imagine somebody else who's a better combination of size and speed in that second level of the defense and beyond.
Whether it's the stiff arm, whether it's, and Ryan Tannehill spoke on that. He said he was special. And then he said the reason why is because he could get you those tough, muddy 2 to 3 yard gains. But even, look, the run again, you talk about eight in the box, right? The run against the Ravens and their tough defense. After 2 yards, he ran into a guy. Get off me.
Boom. Bounced. Broke out. Gone.
That's a perfect example.
And then, so tying this back to that offensive line, because on that one run, I remember watching that and seeing that and thinking, okay, that's where Derrick Henry decisively created more than what was there. And that was impressive. But tying it to the offensive line with these two metrics from Next Gen Stats, it's also shows you how the offensive line is opening things up quickly so Henry can see it and just boom, go, making Henry's life easier because of how these guys are moving everybody that we're seeing on the film and in tape and that we're still using Next Gen Stats to quantify the size of these gaps and all that stuff. Run block win rate is something that's being worked on by ESPN, but you can kind of see those things through how efficient a running back is running and how much time that running back is spending behind the line of scrimmage. If it's open, Derrick Henry, hit it, go, do your thing.
Remember earlier this year, we were like, well, you know, there's so many negative plays, right?
Yep.
Negative runs from Derrick Henry. It's crazy the way, what did it say? Life comes at you fast. And you seem to have gotten an epiphany. So I want to know what did God just drop into your mind?
You said you saw it earlier, and we saw it earlier in the season, and I completely forgot part of the research I was doing was looking at Derrick Henry in weeks 4 through 6, which were basically his worst games, and looking at the efficiency and time behind the line of scrimmage metrics for those. And he was nowhere near the top 10. He basically, that was also when the offensive line wasn't doing the same things they were doing, like we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And that also tells you that part of it is Derrick Henry, him having to be efficient as a runner, get upfield, north to south, do it quickly. But he can only do that if there's even a sliver of a gap to run through, because you kind of don't just want him to run straight up at his center, Ben Jones or something.
Right.
So these metrics give you that kind of look at what the offensive line is opening for him quickly that he can just go run at.
Yeah, it's really awesome how everything is just kind of coming together and
in an unprecedented way.
Right. Right. And I mean, it really is unprecedented. You know, you look at this 8-game stretch, you know, there were two stretches that kind of overlapped for Adrian Peterson when he had the 2,000 yards. Those are the only 2 8-game stretches that are better than what this guy's producing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Derrick Henry needs 83 more yards to go into the Super Bowl, provided that they win, right, with 2,000 yards. Emmitt Smith did it 3 times. Terrell Davis did it once, as well as Sean Alexander. Other than that, nobody.
And you're looking at a game against the Chiefs where it's totally feasible that it keeps working.
I just want to see if they sell out to stop the run. You know, listen, Calvin, I'm telling you, straight up, play action, go deep. Khalif Raymond, get the road running.
He already did it once this year.
I would start the game that way.
Yeah.
Like, let him know, like, look, man, this is what it is. Right from the jump.
Yep. Which is interesting. It's kind of a reverse of a lot of what they've done throughout the year to start the season. Throughout the season to start each game. And then there are even times where they start the game, they'd run the play action, and then it's like the rollout dump-off pass like we saw to Michael Pruitt or something. But that would be gutsy from Arthur Smith. And what has Arthur Smith been for a lot of the season since Tannehill took over? Gutsy. He's been able to throw it on the table and say, I got two aces. And they've hit on him at an insanely efficient level again, which is what's also crazy is how efficient they've been in downfield passing, and it sometimes feels like they just don't miss on these passes.
Yeah, you're talking about maximize, fully take advantage of the opportunities, man.
It's right there, and if they just keep riding it, they're going to the Super Bowl.
Basically. I don't think there's anything else that needs to be said, man. Calvin's Corner was en fuego today, as it is every other week. So that was your segment on Calvin's Corner. We're going to go to a break then. And you know what? We got to put a bow tie around this thing. You know what I mean? We'll be right back.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
Anyone could get touched, but my style of gun is too quick.
Yeah. That's that HNIC, the prodigy. You know what I mean? YBEs, man. This is what we do, right? We bring the old school hip hop. We bring that stuff that makes you want to dance because you know what? If you don't want to dance this week leading up to this big game, then you know what? I think you need to get what's the thing they do? The stethoscope, have them put that on your arm because they need to test you for a heartbeat. Because if you are not excited this week, you don't have a heart in your chest. This is a major game. I listen, man. I love the energy that surrounds this, even just in practice, just with the extra, you know, the new friends that St. Thomas Sports Park has. I love it, though. So, look, man, it's a huge game, and it's on the road. So, when you look at the road, right, Arrowhead Stadium, I've been there twice, covering two separate teams, 49ers and Eagles. That place really does, it gets turned up. It gets turned up, man, and it's, you know, like, it looks like a spaceship that was just dropped in the middle of nowhere, right next to the Chiefs, the Royals Field. These fans, man, they love their Chiefs, man. They love their Chiefs. The daggone AFC champion. What more poetic justice would it be, right, to go into Arrowhead Stadium and win that game and hoist the trophy that's named after Lamar Hunt? Y'all know who Lamar Hunt is? He's the guy who started the Chiefs. The Lamar Hunt trophy is what you get when you win the AFC championship. I'm just saying. This team has won two straight road games, right? We think they're going to win a third one. But you look at what they've done. When it's in New England, beat the AFC champions. Super Bowl champions, rather, went into Baltimore, beat the top seed in the league, in the AFC, and the MVP of the league. If they could pull this one off against Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in the league, ooh, and I'm not even that guy to get into ifs, but I tell you, man, this could be a major win. And it's something that when you're going into these volatile, like I tell you what this is like. This is like getting in the car with your homies, right? And, you know, let's say just for commonality, let's say you live on the south side, right? You live on the south side, but you got to go to the north side because there's something in the north side that you have to go get, right? So you got to get in the car with your homies. You're going to pack up your best homies. Your ones that you know that you can rely upon when that stuff hits the fan, you know you can rely upon them. That is what this Titans team is facing, right? And if you had to pick, like if you had to go living the South Side, you're going to the North Side, knowing that the South Side and North Side don't get along, you're going to pick your guys. Like, you're not going to go into that situation with just some teammates, right? You're going in with brothers. Here's the thing. This Titans team, they are a brotherhood. This locker room, they are close-knit. They play for each other. And that's a phrase that just gets thrown around so much. So when we had availability with some of the players, I wanted them to make it tangible. I wanted them to turn it into something that someone who hasn't had the privilege to be a part of a brotherhood, whether it be a group of guys in the office, a group of guys that go and play basketball together at the Y, whatever. I wanted to make it tangible for someone who can't relate to brotherhood and can't relate to going into a tense situation together and knowing that that guy is going to have your back. Here's Ben Jones on what brotherhood means to him.
A lot of time into this. It's not just, hey, you show up to camp, you play. It starts in the offseason. It starts in free agency. You're building that bond with guys who you've never met before, and it takes time. And we do everything possible to try to be a close-knit group, from spending time outside of football to going to dinners together, spending time with your families together. And it means more if you have a personal relationship with the guy next to you, because you don't want to let your brother down. If it's just a teammate, you don't know him, it might be easier. But when you care for that guy beside you, and you know what his family's going through, you love each other, and you go out there and you lay on the line for each other.
Goosebumps. That's what I get when I listen to that. Goosebumps, man. And that's the thing that's so cool about this team. And that's what makes it so fun to cover this team. I'm telling you, and Calvin, I said it earlier. Actually, I said it last year. I said last year's team reminded me of the 16 Eagles. Then I said this year, you know, this year team, it reminds me of the 17 Eagles. And I said, I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself. Like, I'm not saying they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But it just reminds me of, like, just as far as the progression and how they are. Fans, I'm going to tell you, jump on this train if you're not on it, because it could be taken away from you pretty quickly. The NFL, man, like, rosters turn over. What you have here to watch is something special. Buy into it. I want to give you another example, because we got the offensive lineman side. We got, you know, like the country guy side of things. I want to give you Kevin Byard's side, too, because I asked him the same question. I like what he said as well. So check this out.
Just a unity among our teammates, I think, that's been building up from when we started here in April, really holding each other accountable, trusting each other, trusting the coaching staff, and then honestly just going to pretty much most of our games, being underdogs, understand, having that mentality that, you know, we're all we got, and taking that and really buying into that, I think it's really brought everybody together and understanding that when we play together and we trust each other, we talk on the sidelines, staying poised, staying calm in times of adversity, it's really brought us together. And, you know, whenever you sweat and you bleed and, you shed a couple of tears with some brothers and some guys, it's going to build a great brotherhood.
He said we all we got. Hey, listen, Calvin, one of the things, like when Malcolm Jenkins would bring the Eagles together, right, in 2017, he'll bring them together, and he would say, we all we got, we all we need. The similarities are interesting. And even, who was it? I can't remember who it was. I think it was Jarrell Casey spoke about embracing the underdog role. There are so many parallels between those two teams, right? And it's just fun to watch. Right. And it's fun to see everything just evolve. And it's been nothing but organic, you know, how everything has continued to process. This is one of the funnest years. 17 was the most fun I had covering the team. But this is a close second. And hey, man, you know, if we're still doing a game on February 2nd and, you know, there's a win associated with that, who knows? This might be the most fun I've had covering a year in that type of situation, most year I've had. But, you know, I think we got to kind of bring everything all back to the, you know, let's fall back, right? Easy. Ain't that what Darren Bates says? Easy. Slow down, Kemosabe. So we're going to do that. Before we get you out of here, you know what we got to do, man. Yeah, man, let me. Can I get the music, please?
Blow the whistle.
All right, all right, all right. Blow the whistle. Hey, man, like we talked a lot of good. We focused on some things that had to get better. We focused on some things to be concerned. But this is one of my favorite segments. Keep it real. Blow the whistle. Dadgummit. Hey, Derek, can I holler at you for a second? hey, big fella, can I talk to you for a second? You had 195 yards rushing. My man, you could have had 200. I'm blowing the whistle on Derek Henry, on Chasing TD every week. He's the Mac Daddy. Not on my show. Derek. I'm blowing the whistle on you, man. Don't get hawked down again. You let Marcus Peters hawk you down. All this talk, I always say Derrick Henry has that Jerry Rice speed because he doesn't get caught from behind. You're making me a liar, man. All jokes aside, man, listen, there's not really much you could blow the whistle on from that last game. I'm nitpicking. It's all good because that's what we have to do in this segment. We got to find something to criticize. But hey, look, man, that's the show. Chasing TD, we are going to have that for you. We're going to have a bonus edition Sunday morning, 10 to or 8 to 10, Rise and Shine. We're going to have a special edition of Chasing TD. We're going to have 102.5 The Game all day for you. Make sure you tune in. I am Teron Davenport here for Calvin Smith. You have just talked with TD. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.